Hello, and welcome to the Mosaic Weekly Podcast. Mosaic exists to follow Jesus in authentic community for the world, and we do this in several different ways. On Sundays, we meet together for three gatherings at 1832 Northeast Cesar E. Chavez Boulevard in the heart of the Hollywood District of Portland. Our gatherings start at 9:15 and 11 a.m. and at 6:15 p.m. with child care available at all gatherings. We also meet in life groups all over the city, and God calls us to love the city of Portland. If you'd like more information about who we are, how to be involved, how to find a life group, or you have some other question, please visit our website at www.mosaicportland.org, or just come and hang out with us at one of our gatherings. We look forward to seeing you, and for now, here's this week's talk.
Would you find a Bible and then find John chapter 13, not 1 John, John chapter 13. It's in the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John's the fourth book. I want to read the first verse to us before we kind of say where we're going today. So find your way to John chapter 13. We've been in a series, as Matt just mentioned, called Me After Jesus. And what basically we're doing is saying as we encounter Jesus, as we experience Jesus, that we're actually going to be changed by that. He's going to call us forward. He's going to radically transform our lives. And so what do we look like after Jesus? 2 weeks ago, we talked about what it meant to become more like him and looking at the patterns of Jesus' own life and how we can emulate those. Last week, our founding pastor, Randy Shaw, was here and taught through what it looks like to be a people who are sent into the world and what kind of community we're called to be, that passionate spiritually, to be a radical community and have the missional zeal. And this week, we're going to look at a picture, a story, a scene in the life of Jesus, where he served those closest to him. So John chapter 13, the first verse says this: it was just before Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. This is the first verse, and John is setting up this scene that we're going to take a look at today and get a picture of, and hopefully even feel what it was like to be a part of that and see what we can learn from it. But this first verse kind of sets it up, and what it says is it's Passover festival or the Passover feast. And Jesus' culture, the Jewish culture, is one of the things that's centered on throughout year after year is the feasts that come throughout the year. And they kind of are just great, big, wonderful parties where you eat a lot, and they're very meaningful, and there's all different kinds of meaning. The Passover meal specifically points back to when the Jewish people, the Israelites, were freed by God out of slavery in Egypt. And each part of the meal symbolized something. And so every time the Passover meal shows up in the book of John, it's pointing to Jesus, that Jesus is actually the ultimate fulfillment of that meal, meaning he's the ultimate Passover lamb. He's the ultimate sacrifice. There's so much within that story, but what it is it's pointing, it's giving us a hint to what's coming. And then it says that he knew his time had come. And what that means is that Jesus knew that very shortly he was going to be going to the cross. He knew that very quickly his time was coming where he would give his very life, that he would die on the cross. And then the next sentence says that he loved those that were in the world, those that had been given to him, his disciples particularly. And it says he loved them till the end. And what it does not mean is that he loved them until he was crucified. He's crucified about 24 hours later. So it's really soon to the scene that we're going to look at today. But it doesn't mean that he loved him right until the point he was crucified. And he's like, my job with them is done. I don't have to love them anymore. They were tough work. That's not what it means. It means that he loved them not to the end of a period of time. It means that he loved them in the final way. He loved them to the extreme. He loved them to the uttermost way that he could love them. And again, if you're familiar with the story of Jesus, you can imagine giving your life. Is there a greater way to love somebody by dying for them? But what we have is we have that line. He loved them till the end. He loved them in the uttermost way. And then we have what's next. And so what we'll see in this next scene is that one of the ways that Jesus loves in the most significant ways, one of the ways that he gives himself the most, is by simple acts of service. Let's take a look at this scene and then what we can learn from it. It says this. This is the Last Supper, by the way. It says the evening meal. This is the Last Supper. Was in progress. And the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. Under his outer clothing, he would have had a really long t-shirt, or basically picture Jesus in pajamas. took out his overcoat. He had his kind of pajamas, long t-shirt thing, wrapped a towel around him. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" And Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter. Peter was really, really good and really helpful to explain things to Jesus where Jesus was confused, and he's doing it again here. "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." "Then, Lord," Simon Peter replied, "not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." Jesus answered, "Those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean. And you are clean, though not every one of you." He's referring to Judas. And not because Judas hadn't bathed that day. But "for he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he said not everyone was clean. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." Every time I read that and picture what that scene was like, I get a little uncomfortable. I actually get pretty shocked. I mean, it's a dramatic scene. For somebody who's been leading something that has been so influential, for somebody who has gotten to the age of, he's probably between 30 and 33, so he's a fairly young man. He's got these close friends around him, and for the last 3 years, he's been doing amazing things. He has got power. He's a leader. He's influencing men and women and children and a whole culture, and he's riling up the religious leaders that have had the power, and everything was going fine as it was working for them, and he's riling them up. He's got all of this influence, and he really does have power. And then he does something that was so mundane and menial that the common person wouldn't do it. Not for a whole group like that. That was a slave's responsibility. And Jesus kneels down and washes his friend's feet. Jesus had waited and had prepared and had planned to do just this. He knew the impact that it would have. And in fact, it actually has this great sentence in here. In verse 3, it says this: Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power. He had power. It put all things under his power. First chapter of Colossians talked how the whole universe was created through Jesus. And now he's supreme over everything. And yet he's on his knees washing somebody's feet now. Put all things under his power. And that he had come from God and was returning to God. Jesus knew exactly who he was. And then it says in verse 4, so. Because Jesus knew who he was, it then says, so he did this. Let me explain it to you this way. Many of you are probably like me in this way. You have friends. I have friends who run. I have friends who run. And then I have friends who are runners. Right? You know there's a big difference, right? Friends who run, friends who are runners. Here's how we tell them apart. Here's a test case. If you hear the statement, "I ran 30 miles this week," and then you apply it to both, you know the difference. Let's start with friends who run. If you have a friend who runs, if I have a friend who runs, and they say to me in conversation, "I ran 30 miles this week." What? What kind of medication are you on? How's recovery going? That's phenomenal. How did you do that? How are you feeling? When did you do that? What day? How did you divide it up? What was it like? Did you run 1 mile and then go home and rest and then go out and run another mile and then go home and like, so was that cool that you took the week off of work? Like what did you do to celebrate? Really? You went out to happy hour after you finished 30 miles. That's great. You had a beer and some Cajun tots and a whole plate of nachos. That's fantastic. That's so awesome. You know, and they posted it everywhere. They've told all their friends, you know, it's this big life achievement. That's friends who run. Right? Friends who are runners. I ran 30 miles this week. Okay, quickly in my head, I do math and I go, 30, you probably took a day off. So 6 into 30 is usually 5. So 5. Oh, okay. Wow. You ran 5 miles a day. Oh yeah. I was running 7 or 8. So what's that close to? Yeah. Whatever that is, like 50. Oh, okay. So what were the tots like that you ate? I mean, that's just no big deal to them, right? It's like, that's what we do. It's, are you sore? How much or how many bottles of ibuprofen did it take to recover? None. That's what I do. Like, you know, I actually have 6 pairs of shoes and I alternated every day and that's what I did. And you know what? On 2 of the days I even sweat and yeah, it was great. And that's just what they do. They that's no big deal when they say I've run 30 miles this week. You kind of just dismiss it like, and you know, and I walked to the car this week. But if somebody who's just runs intermittently runs 30 miles in a week, it's this huge thing. Here's the deal. When Jesus washes the disciples' feet, this is what I usually feel like. I read this and I go, this blows my mind. I can't imagine what that experience was like and what that actually felt like. And gee, that's so amazing. 24 hours later, he gets beaten to a pulp and nailed to a cross. Washing the feet was not a big deal. What Jesus is doing is saying, this is who I am. I am a servant. I serve. This isn't a... We act as if Jesus got up, put his coat back on, sat down at the table and all the disciples were just celebrating him, sliding in nachos and tater tots and like celebrating it was a big deal. Jesus is like, this is no big deal at all. This is what I do. I serve. It's natural. It's in my identity. It's part of my character. It's part of who I am that I serve those around me. I give my life away and serve. And so often I think, and maybe you think the same way, that this was some kind of dramatic scene. And Jesus says, no, this is just part of who I am and part of how I live. And he gets to the end of the scene and he says, I've done this as an example for you. I want you to go and do this. And what we find in this story is actually a pattern for us of what we're called to do. And no, we're not called to all wash each other's feet. That would be weird and uncomfortable. Although that might be meaningful in some way and helpful. I've had friends who have done it in the context of their wedding ceremony. I've done it in a special worship gathering before. It is as odd as it sounds and it's uncomfortable and at the same time beautiful. Jesus is not saying, hey, go find people in your life and go wash their feet. You would lose a lot of friends and acquaintances that wouldn't go well with them for the most part. And for those that it would go well with, that's a little odd. But he's not saying, go wash people's feet. He's saying, I want you to serve. And what he does is he paints for us a picture. This is what this is like. Really quickly, 5 things that kind of help us understand what serving looks like from the ultimate servant. The first thing is this. It involves us. If we're going to serve, it involves us giving up something. Look at this passage from Matthew. It's Matthew chapter 20, verses 25 through 28. Jesus called them together and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. That's what we're all used to, that people in authority, they do this. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you, you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first among you, your slave. Just as the Son of Man, just as Jesus did not come to be served, but to serve. And to give his life as a ransom for many. Because that's who he was. That was in his character. That was his identity, was to serve. And he gave up the power. Everybody wanted to keep giving him and elevate him to some position. When a person that is running for either re-election or to be elected to a particular office, and the TV camera's on them and their cameras are snapping pictures, and they go into a diner down by some road and they step behind the counter and they put on the fry cook's apron and they stand there and flip burgers for a few minutes. We all kind of see through that and go, that's not what you do on a regular basis. In fact, you probably have people that do just about everything for you. And while that looks good, and maybe your intentions are very pure, you don't do that on a regular basis. You have a certain level of power and authority that you keep. And Jesus says, no, that's to be different for my people. That's to be different for this people, that we actually give up the power that we have. We give up something. It might be something as simple as our time or our energy. It might be something deeply rooted in us, like our pride, even our reputation, even if it's just for a moment. But that when we serve in the way that Jesus is calling us to serve, we actually give up something for a moment. The second thing it involves is actually meeting a need. The kind of serving that God's calling us to, that Jesus modeled for us, is that we actually meet somebody's need, that we see a need in somebody's life, and then we step in to meet it. And this doesn't need to be a major thing. In fact, this, as Jesus modeled for us, it was so simple and small, but that we actually meet a real and practical need, that it's something that somebody is not have. It's actually one of the reasons that when we go to a hospital, we notice that there's weird names on them, like Emmanuel or St. Jude's or Presbyterian, whatever that means. And it's the reason that it is because followers of Jesus for so long now have said, what are needs in our society? It's healthcare for people. How can we help that? And that's why those names end up on so many of our hospitals. We're meeting a practical need. The third thing is this. That not only are we giving up something and not only are we meeting a practical need, but it also involves the understanding that our act, our engagement with another person, is actually tied to eternity. That while it's both a practical, tangible, specific need, that it actually is connected to eternity. Jesus gets down on his knees and washes his disciples' feet, not only because they were dirty and they needed to be clean, but because he wanted to model for them how deeply he loved them. When I typically in a meal like that, a slave would come and wash their feet, and the men would sit and eat and probably hardly pay attention that their feet were getting cleaned. Maybe not even look at the person, thank them or acknowledge them or look them in the eye. They wouldn't even think about it. There's no love communicated when a slave washes a feet. But when Jesus did it, he understood that he was teaching them, he was communicating to them something deeply significant. That the one that they knew had power was God in the flesh, was getting down and washing their feet. And I cannot even imagine what that would be like, the uncomfortability. Well, actually, I can. I would probably pop off like Peter and want to sound really smart. Let's not do this. I'm uncomfortable with this. And Jesus, please remain in your position of authority, because me following you when you're in position of authority feels so much better to me than when you're doing this. But he modeled for them something that was attached to all of eternity. And that was his love for them. When we serve others, as we seek to follow Jesus as he served us, and we go and serve others, we understand that there's something going on more than just meeting a need. The fourth thing is this. Our motivation matters. The ease with which we serve other people, the ease with which we step in and meet a need when it pops up, actually allows us to check our own heart. When I was studying this last couple of weeks and trying to think through of how great a person I am and want to be, and all of the ways that I serve people, the one that I couldn't get out of my mind, that I kept trying to get out of my mind, was how it's really hard for me at times to serve my 7-year-old. I put him in bed at night, and I tuck him in, and not every night, but the nights that I get to, and that I'm there, and we trade off, and sometimes we do it together, but I tuck him in, and I lean down, and I give him a kiss, and after I've read or told him no, or however that goes, fluctuates, and tell him I love him, and tell him that he's special, that he's good, I'm so proud of him. And then I stand up, which at the end of the day, I feel like I've just been a phenomenal father, because I've just said all of those great things to him. And then I stand up, and all of my energy and bodily motion is headed out the door. And not just out the door, but I've already projected exactly where I'm going to land on the couch and what channel I'm going to be watching. And so I'm in motion to that. The goal is clear. And as I'm walking out the door, and it usually happens right at the threshold of the door, Dad, can I have some water? No, you cannot have water. Absolutely not. You missed that. That was like 2.5 minutes ago to ask for water. And realize that it takes everything in me to not scream that like I just did now, but to turn back and say, Yeah. Just take it first. That's what I do. That I can't. At the end of the day, that's what I can muster. Okay, and I go out and half the time, I'm just being completely honest here. Half the time, as I turn back and muster, of course, love. I see a cup of water from 4 to 14 nights ago sitting there, and I just go, hey, this is it, and he, looks at it and goes, no, a fresh one. Dang. It is a simple thing like that is hard for me. And what it does is it checks my motivation. Why am I serving you? I don't know why, because I don't want to be right now, but to go, okay, even in this, what? Isn't it? I mean, could Jesus have done something else? Like, could he just have done a teaching on this? But no, he actually, the God of the universe got down on his knees and washed dirty feet. Yeah, I can get you a drink of water. Though I really don't want to. So now I'm serving and I'm checking my motivation, the ease with which I'm doing it, which is none at all. And the heart that it takes to go, okay, what is it in me that makes this so hard? What is it in me that doesn't want to do this? How can I actually start the good night routine a few minutes earlier so that I can build in time for that, so that I don't absolutely lose it as a father and actually serve my son in this way? So our motivation. And the last thing is this. When we serve in the way that Jesus served us, when we follow this pattern, this model that he's given us, it will always open up the door for a new level of intimacy. It always opens the door for connection, for relationship. It always does. That might sound weird as you're imagining yourself serving somebody you don't know very well. But isn't it fascinating that Jesus, he gets down on his knees and he moves around to all the guys laying around the table. They didn't sit, they kind of laid, it's just. And he took their feet in his lap and he probably looked at them and he washed their feet. I have no idea if he got in between their toes or not. But he had them there. For Peter, he had a debate with, because Peter's just Peter. Isn't it fascinating that he washed Judas's feet? And he knew that Judas was going to betray him. He washed his feet. Andrew was probably late to everything. And so he probably didn't even shower that day. And he was sweating because he ran into the Last Supper. And so he's washing sweaty feet when he got to Andrew. And he goes around, and that's an intimate thing to handle somebody's feet, usually done for a slave that you don't even look at. And he's looking up in the eye. And what it does is it actually provided a context for intimacy. And we serve people in so many different ways. But when it is personal, when it is us giving us up something, time, energy, whatever it might be, it opens up door for the potential for relationship. It always does. Whether we step into it, whether they receive it, we open ourselves to that invitation. What a wonderful thing. Those are five parts of the model, the pattern that Jesus sets before us, that we give up something, that we meet a need, that we understand it's connected to eternity, that it gives us a chance to check our motivation, and it provides an opportunity for intimacy. There are so many ways that we could talk about this and what that actually looks like in our own lives. I feel the need to just say one way, and we're short on time anyways, and so we don't have time for more. But I need to say this. As we talk about being a community that seeks to model how Jesus serves us and we serve others, we start with one another here, and then we serve others outside of here. I took 2 weeks of vacation in August. It's pretty normal. It's what we've done as a family for some years now. I came back after 2 weeks, and that was now 4 weeks ago. And in the span of those last 4 weeks that I've been back, there is at least a half a dozen marriages in our community that are struggling, in crisis to some degree, are very broken, and perhaps might not be repairable. Different levels of that. Six that have come to my attention that I've been told about, that I've been praying for. That means there's probably another six that nobody even knows about, because we don't know how to talk about that so often. But six that have gotten to the point of reaching out for help. So let me say this. And again, for some of you that are single, please don't turn off to this. You're like, I'm not married. This is for those people that are married. But if you're single right now and you're listening to this, you may be married someday. You may want to get married. Please hear this. For those that are married, we have to start with those closest to us. We don't get out of that. We don't get to hear, oh, Jesus washed his disciples' feet and then later gave his life. So the stranger on the street, I'm going to serve in some way. We're called to serve those that are closest to us first and then move out from there. Husbands, serve your wife. Do something absolutely, phenomenally courageous and bold and sacrificial and find a way to serve your wife. If you hear that and you say, Tim, you have no idea how long it's been since she's ever paid attention to me or cared for me or even thought of serving me. I'm so ticked at her. It's hard to even muster love for her. I don't know how I feel towards her. Be courageous. Give up of yourself and serve your wife. And not because you're going to get something in return. Not because it's going to fix your marriage and solve everything and make it perfect. But because it's what Jesus has done for you. And so find out, you have no idea what it will lead to. You don't have any idea what it's going to do. But find a way to start with those closest to you. And find a way to serve you. There may be something as simple as that bowl that has been sitting on the counter for 7 days. And you both are having an internal battle that it's the other person that left it there. And whatever on there has crusted on there that will take, it will take upwards of 45 minutes to get it clean at this point. And you're personally battling of who's actually going to do it. Because you're both convinced it's the other person's fault. And what it really is your neighbor that came over and left it. It doesn't matter, but find a way to do something meaningful and mundane that's actually giving up of yourself and saying, I'm gonna kneel down and give to you in some way. Hear this. It is impossible to lead your wife if you do not serve your wife. Wives, serve your husbands. Serve your husbands. You might think, I can't find any last shred of respect for him. And so serving him, you don't even know how much I serve already. You know all the ways that I serve him and that I think about it every day in my world. I had to learn this one. My wife had to make me aware of this. I have heard from her all of the ways that I have failed her in the past, and we've worked through so many things. And so I think I have an inkling of what that might feel like for you as wives. But because Jesus has served you, would you find a way, in a simple way, to serve your husband? Not because there's some guarantee on the other side of it, but because it's the way that you've been loved by our Savior. Would you find a way to serve your husband? Isn't it interesting that at the very moment that Jesus kneels down to love his disciples to the utmost by washing their feet, that at that very moment there's evil in the room, that Judas is going to betray them, betray him. And as we think in the context of marriage, of serving one another, let's remember that Judas's feet ended up just as clean as Peter's feet at the end of that foot washing ceremony. And we are attacked constantly in the context, the sacred context of marriage. And we are right now as a community. And again, if I know about six, that means there are at least double that within our midst. And so would we respond to that attack in some simple way by serving our husbands and wives? And there are numerous and infinite other ways that we can find to serve one another. But I've just felt led and convicted to call us to that today as a community. And again, if you're single, hopefully someday that will be a challenge that you face, if that's what God's called for you in your life. But would you encourage those around you who are married to find a way to serve their husbands and wives? There's another way that we can see how what serving looks like, and that there's two families in our midst here that are being sent out, that God's called them elsewhere, that they're serving in different places around our world. And I want to invite them up here now and pray for them as we send them out, and then we'll take communion together. But I'd like to invite the Eisenbergs and the Eccles up here. There you guys go. We didn't really talk through how we're going to stand, so we're going to make this up right now. This is Betsy. We're going to start with Joseph and Joanna Eisenberg. Is there pictures up? So Betsy and Pete, thank for serving them by letting them go first. But, whoa. Oh, dang it. There we go. Okay. I'm just not even going to look at that. Joseph and Joanna Eisenberg, they're headed to Papua, Indonesia. Really? I'm still not sure that exists, but I'm going to go with it. So I just learned that this week. I had you guys going to Papua New Guinea, but I don't, you know, they joined teams. I don't, okay, cool. Good. So I don't know the history or of where you're going, but what you guys are called to do. Joseph, you're a doctor. Joanna, I understand you're going to be working with Wycliffe, and you guys are going with Wycliffe and translating scripture into a language that doesn't currently have the Bible in their language. Amazing way to serve a people group that is largely unreached and so many don't know the name of Jesus. And so it's been so great to have you a part of Mosaic and a part of this community, riding your bikes around all over for the last couple of years. Your kids are here, and to watch you guys grow up and continue to thrive as you follow Jesus and to be sent to a completely different part of the world. It's so amazing. So great to be able to send you and commission you today. Pete and Betsy, can't believe we're here. How many years have you guys been? Say five, six?
Six at least.
Yeah. Six at least. Okay. Pete and Betsy are headed to the outermost reaches of Alaska, which is a state north of here, if you don't know where that is. Pete, you've been learning how to fly planes, and I understand that you know how to do that now.
Yeah, shiny side up.
That's good. Good. Glad you got that down. That was on a test somewhere. Pete's a pilot, and he will be flying to really extremely remote parts of Alaska, where, as you can imagine, the people groups that are there and what it looks like for pastors to actually be called there and sent there, and the amount of resources they have, the things that they deal with there, like the high rate of alcoholism and suicide, and just the struggle that it is to be there. And so Pete is a pilot, and Betsy is going to be they're going to be caring together, but primary part of your call is just caring for people that are hurting and struggling on the mission field as they're serving. We were looking through, Abby and I were looking through your list. We're on your prayer list and the supplies that you have. And we picked just a couple little things to send to you. And what we did not pick was bear repellent.
The bear spray?
Bear spray. Okay, so that's a real thing. So they're going to a place that requires bear spray. So you're going to a place that doesn't have the Bible in their language. You're going to a place that you have to fight with bears. So very unique calling, very remote places in significant need in our world. We are honored to be in community with you and to be a part of sending you, for you to model so well what it looks like to serve some of the least of these in our world. And so we're going to miss you deeply to have you not here on a regular basis, but are so glad to be a part of supporting you on a daily basis. So what I'm going to do is pray for them. I'm going to invite you to pray with me. And again, one of the things that we do here is just invite you, if you do have the forearm strength, to just extend a hand and join in as we pray together, as we send them together. And so I'm going to pray and send them. So I'm going to stand behind you here. And God, we thank you so much for these two families. And the way that you have equipped them and prepared them, the way that you have called them. Would you now, as we see before us, two marriages, would you help them as husbands and wives to creatively find new ways to serve and sacrifice to one another, and in so doing, love and respect one another? Would you protect these marriages, deepen them, strengthen them, and prepare them for the challenges of serving you in new contexts? Would you protect them, keep them physically safe, help them as they transition from places that they know and are familiar with to new places? And then would you use them significantly as your word is translated onto paper into a new language, and people will come to read about you and be led by you? Will people come to know you? Would you use the Eisenbergs in that way? The people who are serving in remote and very desperate areas of Alaska into a part of our world that is often and frequently forgotten. Would you use the echoes to encourage those that are ministering on the front lines? Would you use Pete's unique skill as a pilot to be able to provide care and resources in that? and use Betsy and her ability to know how to care for those that are hurting and struggling. God, would you use them significantly? God, thank you for these two families. Thank you for the model of serving that they are for us. We send them out in your name and trusting you as you lead them and use them. In Jesus' name.
Thank you for listening to the Mosaic Weekly Podcast. We broadcast every Sunday from the Hollywood District in Portland, Oregon. If you'd like more information about who we are as a community, there's two addresses you should visit. Firstly, you can find us at www.mosaicportland.org, or you can just come and visit us on a Sunday at 1832 Northeast Cesar E. Chavez Boulevard. Thank you again for listening, and have a great day. We'll be right back.